We made this.
Welcome to the Starlight Ballroom. Hey!
Hello and welcome to Shipwrecked and Comatose, the podcast about Red Dwarf here on the We Made This podcast network. And we are on the hump of the week as we are doing an episode a week looking at the first 7 issues of the Red Dwarfs magazine. I'm Mark and I am joined by Colin. Hello, Colin.
Good evening.
I'm also joined by Carl. Hello, Carl.
Hello.
I haven't got anything witty to say for this particular episode, so should we just get on with issue 4?
Yeah. We're only halfway through the week and you're burnt out already. Fucking hell.
Oh, don't. 7 things we could... Anyway, yeah. So, it was released in May... Because the cover said June 1992. See, Colin, I am doing a learn.
Yep, well done.
And the cover has a big holly face surrounded by planets, starbug, and a cup of tea.
And some random hubcaps.
Was the hubcaps?
Yeah. I've only just noticed it, but I've zoomed in. And yeah, I'm fairly certain that they're hubcaps, which is a nice sort of Plan 9 sort of reference.
I mean, I thoroughly approve of the cup of tea, but... So, Plan 9, explain. Plan 9 from outer space with the fucking saucers on a stick.
Exactly.
I love that film.
I found it on Amazon Prime the other day. Someone's done a colourised version of it. And I might sit down and watch that, see what that's like.
Yeah.
I thought the cup of tea on the front was a bit of a nod to Peter Ragg, because whenever they did like a swirly thing in space, like a time portal, wasn't it normally like Peter Ragg's cup of tea that he just stirred really fast and then filmed it?
I don't know. That's an awesome fact, if that's true.
I also hope it's true.
It's, which episode is it? It's the one, it's backwards. When they see the swirly thing in space,
yeah,
it's a cup of tea.
That's awesome.
Amazing. Dropping the hot knowledge there, Carl.
Coming in hot.
There's also an ad for the Danny John Jules interview, which, you know, is quite exciting because it's Danny John Jules and it's an interview. First up is Holly Calling, which is a broadcast by Holly pointing out that she's clever and there's a Kevin Keegan joke. And she basically goes through all of Red Dwarf's machines, the toaster, Crichton, etc.
I like that that's at the start of the magazine this time, because that's like, it's like the SOS distress call from the mining ship Red Dwarf bits at the start of, you know, the episodes in the first series.
Oh, shit, you're right as well. That's good.
Yeah, I think they should stick with it like that, because it's great.
Doesn't Crichton look menacing, though?
It does a little, yes.
Because I know in later editions, there's a Jake Bullitt comic strip, and that's drawn really almost grittily, like a 2000 AD piece, and he kind of looks like that. That sparked a memory for me when I saw it of what the future comic strips are going to be like. Because a lot of them are in this style. It could be the same artist as well.
Mm. Next up is the Series 5 survey, and it asks readers to list their favourite Season 5 episodes, 1 to 6, their favourite episodes of all time, 1 to 6, and whether or not you're left or right-handed. So, gentlemen, have you actually done this?
Yes. Yes, I have.
Cool. Well, Colin, why don't you go first?
Okay. So, Series 5 in... least favourite to favourite order. Bearing in mind I've not watched Series 5 for a very long time because I was saving it up for when we record those episodes. Demons and Angels, Terraform, Inquisitor, Quarantine, Hollow Ship and Back to Reality, which is probably my favourite Red Dwarf episode ever, I reckon.
Carl, what about you?
Going in, say, reverse order, I've got Terraform, Quarantine, Inquisitor, which I think I remember as being better than what it actually is. I've got Back to Reality third.
Sacrilege.
I know. And then I've got Demons and Angels. I just really enjoyed the them playing all the different characters in that one.
Yeah.
And then the first one of it, I've got Holoship. I just really enjoyed Holoship.
It's great.
Mm. Yeah. Good grief. I struggled with this. I don't think there's a bum episode in the entire series. No. So I think it is kind of really, really close. But it's funny that all of our top sixes are very, very different, because I went for, again, in reverse order, Terraform, Holoship, Demons and Angels, The Inquisitor, Quarantine, and Back to Reality. So I had the same top, the top choice as Colin.
Cool.
Yeah. Like I say, it's a very strong series. It's probably one of the strongest ones, to be honest. I mean, each one I can think of has got a good scene which would almost put it at top of the list. Like Terraform, I've got as my last one, but it's got the whole scene of Crichton being buried under the wreckage of the ship at the beginning, which is hilarious.
Yeah.
Mm. So it's one that kind of like, yeah, I'm doing ranking in 1 to 6, but I still love all of them.
Yeah.
Indeed.
I also thought it was quite funny that they're asking people to do this survey, and then they're like, for example, here's how we've ranked them, which is just, you couldn't do that as a scientific survey.
No.
You know, and give people what you think the answers are, because you're totally going to bias the results with that.
Yeah, very true, very true. Do you want to go first on the top six of all time, Carl?
Yes. So my top six, this is, I decided not to go past series five in keeping with the time frame of what we're doing.
Oh, shit, that's not what I did, but okay, go ahead.
I've actually got Marooned as my number one.
Right.
It's just a really good two-hander between Rimmer and Lister, and I really quite enjoyed it. Second one is Thanks for the Memory.
Yep.
Just because I enjoyed the... It's in those first series where they don't encounter pretty much anyone else. I think it's one of the best examples of them writing something which is interesting and original in order to not have to rely on monsters.
Yeah.
Then I've got Holoship. Then I've got Time Slides. I really enjoyed Time Slides and the concept of it. And White Hole. And then finally, I've got Future Echoes. All of them, I think, are probably the ones with the more sort of, apart from, I'd say, Maroon, the ones with the sort of more concept stuff going on in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you think your top six would be much different if you included the rest of Red Dwarf as well?
I do. I think there'd be a few more in there. There'd definitely be a couple from Series 6 in there. I mean, obviously, Gunmen of the Apocalypse is one of everybody's favourites. And I do enjoy 7 and 8 as well. So I'd probably have one in there from each of those. It'd probably be, I'd probably say Future Echoes and White Hole would probably get pushed out.
Right.
But Marooned, if there was ever a stage play of Red Dwarf, it'd be Marooned.
Yeah.
Definitely. Yeah, it's perfect. A bit Waiting for Godot, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Or White Hole, because they're all locked in one place together.
Yeah.
So Scientific Experiment completely ruined, because I have included the series subsequent to Series 5. But first up, did you do that, or did you behave like Carl?
I did just up to Series 5, because that's what it says in the magazine. So, basically what they're saying here at the end is, got that, or do we have to explain it all over again for the Star Trek fans? You're the Star Trek fans.
I'm all right with Next Gen and Picard and the cartoon one. I just don't watch any of the others.
Ah, fair enough. I'm probably banned from the network anyway for dissing Babylon 5 earlier.
Mate, Babylon 5's great. I won't have a bad word said against Babylon 5. You can get in the sea. Get on with it. What's your top six?
My top six in reverse order. Future Echoes, for the sci-fi concept of it, is fucking brilliant. Justice, Queeg, because then Queeg shows up. Polymorph, White Hole, and Back to Reality. But yeah, like Carl said, there'd definitely be at least one, if not two, of Series 6 in there. Don't tend to go much past that, because I think I've only
seen series 7 and 8 when they're originally broadcast and never seen them since. Right. And I'm saving those and all the Dave stuff till we get to it.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what I'll do is I will redo my top six and I'll do it as like an Easter egg or a hidden track or something at the end. But I did include all of the episodes. So my six is actually Blue, which is the episode that has the Arnold Rimmer song. He's not bald and his head doesn't glimmer. Yeah. And then at number five is the same one as you, Colin. I put down Justice.
Cool.
Four is Quarantine, three is Back to Reality, two is Emo Hawk, and one is Gunman of the Apocalypse.
Emo Hawk, that's an interesting choice.
I probably would have gone with that. I love Emo Hawk.
So at the moment I've got a top three, which is Back to Reality, Quarantine and Justice. So I need to have like three more after those three, don't I?
You do.
Fuck. Okay, next up is the comic strip, and it is called Mutinous Pursuits, which is a new story, not an adaptation, which I couldn't be more pleased about.
Exactly.
I really think that this is what they should have done in the first place. I know we've discussed on previous episodes about how, for some people, it might be the first time they encountered the story of the end, but I really feel like this is what they should be doing. And there's a Kevin Keegan joke, and it's a story about Scudder Mutiny. And it's fucking superb. It's a really nice little self-contained short story.
This is what I want from a Red Dwarf magazine. I want really good, original, new stories that fit in really well with all of the characters that fit in perfectly and behave as they would do, as we know them well. And it's great. I mean, I'm not entirely pleased about the fact that Rimmer is a strike breaker. You know, he's not one of my favourite characters, but I didn't think of him before as being a scab. But, you know, I'm always solidarity with the Scudders. That's my thing, you know.
I like the scene where Rimmer loses it completely and tries to kick a Scudder.
Yes.
And forgets that he's a hologram.
There's so much to like in this, but I think my favourite thing was the fact that the cat's suit has got a wing mirror.
Yes. Again, I think I mentioned it in the last episode. If there was an animated series, this could easily be an episode.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think if you put a few more jokes in it, you can make it a proper episode, but it wouldn't. I think it would be one that wouldn't get remembered as well.
Yeah. Mm.
It's definitely a fun, and it's written by the features writers, I noticed, as well.
Yeah.
It's probably one of the first examples of a Red Dwarf story that's not written by Grant or Naylor.
Yeah.
And that's still a very rare thing.
Yeah.
I would imagine there's probably a lot of fan fiction, but
yeah.
It's not something I tend to be that interested in. But this is great.
There is pornography, you know.
You have mentioned this before.
Pink Dwarf.
You've got it down in the list of specials to do in the future that I don't think anyone else has signed up for.
No, I'm on it. Mark put me... I think it's because I pointed it out to Mark.
Well, then it's your fault.
Yeah, this is why I haven't said anything about me being put down as the co-host on it, because I saw it. I was like, well, that's my own sword for me to lead onto.
We are going to do it. I don't care. I think it's a funny thing to do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Just as a quick bit in this comic strip, because Rimmer doesn't have the Scudders, he's getting Crichton to do things.
Yeah.
And he sets up essentially like a laser tripwire thing.
Yeah.
But he ballses it up and it's just torches. It's not actually lasers. Because Lister walks through it, but Rimmer's genuinely like, no, don't walk through the thing. He actually seems concerned that he's killed Lister, which I thought was quite a nice touch.
Yeah. It's great. I really want more of these as we go along. It is a fantastic addition.
Yeah.
I think, like you said in the last episode, Carl, this is a turning point when they start doing original comic strips, because it makes it feel more like they've got their stride.
yeah,
and that they're confident in what they're doing.
Yeah, they know that they've got people buying this now.
Yeah.
And so now when it started with the idea of, oh, we could do our own stories. I mean, also, they could have been waiting to get permission because, obviously, you know, Grant Nail have been very protective about the whole, you know, the whole, I don't want to say, what's the word I'm looking
their
for?
Their IP.
Their IP, yeah, that's it. So maybe they had to show them first and get it okayed or whatever, but... But like you say in this one, and in what's coming up on the next couple of pages, we're not just getting pinups now, which are just photographs. We're getting art pieces.
Yeah,
so true. It's true. Genuinely does seem to be finding its feet.
Yeah, you're right. We get ads and pinups next. There's an advert for Wrestling Ringside magazine, and later on in the magazine is another advert for Judge Dredd and the usual Red Dwarf t-shirts that are super cheap. You're right about the pinups, Carl. There is a Cat original artwork piece, which is really, really pretty.
Yeah, it looks like that Three Wolf Moon t-shirt that became like a meme.
Yes.
It would make a fucking brilliant t-shirt, to be honest, that picture.
Yeah.
I was trying to think things. I couldn't remember the Three Wolf t-shirt, but now, I remember that now. I mean, it's one of the first times you see the Cat with a cat, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's you actually see, and I'm guessing that'll be Frankenstein.
Yeah.
The Holy Mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No one believes that.
We learned it in kitty school.
The other pinup, by the way, completely fucking random, is Lister with space mumps. Why?
Part of me feels that is the makeup team going, you know how much time that this took. You are putting a picture of this in the magazine. This is the best thing we've done.
It was wonderful.
Yeah.
The Space Mumps makeup was great.
Yeah.
Next up is the biggie. It is the Danny John Jules interview. And it goes into detail about his previous dance, singing and acting work. And they talk about the suits. Ah, yeah.
As well as the suits, the bit that I picked up on that I didn't know, obviously I will have read this at the time, but I hadn't picked up on it, he's talking about who he based the character on. Because it says, how long did it take you to work out the very distinctive moves and speech patterns of the Cat? And he says, basically, that there was a guy that he understudied in a play. So there's another actor called Clinton Derricks Carroll who used to do really good James Brown impressions. And this is an impression of his James Brown impression.
And you can see the James Brown in it.
Oh, absolutely.
When you see that, yeah.
But yeah. But with the suit bit that you just mentioned, he says he's talking about the pink suit that he wears in Series 1, which was apparently a copy of his own father's suit that he wore when his dad got married. Which is quite cool.
Yeah, because didn't he turn up to his audition? Isn't the story that he turned up to his own audition in a zoot suit?
Yes, I believe so.
Yeah. The interview is really good. It's continued the high quality of interviews that there have been. But he did spring a couple of like old memories for me when he talks about how whichever jobs he takes, he gets to sing.
Yes.
And he says, oh, I played a singer in Runaway Bay. And I was like, God, I remember Runaway Bay.
Of course you remember Runaway Bay. You remember literally every piece of British tat that has ever been on a British telly.
It was really good. It was expensive looking for a kids' TV series.
I don't remember Runaway Bay at all.
Nor me.
It was set on like a Sandals resort in Mauritius or
right.
I think it would have been Jamaica actually. But yeah, and it was just like a group of kids, very kind of like Three Investigators kind of kids solve crimes.
Right.
So shit Dark Season.
But with more palm trees.
Bright Season.
Yeah. Sunny Season.
Yeah.
But he turned up in that one. He basically, anybody who's in Death in Paradise now probably did a guest slot on Runaway Bay.
Right.
Like Don Warrington, people like that. But also he mentioned that the original suits were made by the guy who made them for Lenny Henry.
Yes.
And I remember watching the Lenny Henry show on BBC One, like, all the time.
Yeah.
And yeah, it just triggered that the suits he wore were ridiculous. massive suits.
Lenny Henry's entire costume collection was amazing. Do you remember Theodore Wildebeest?
Yes.
And the gigantic codpiece?
Theopolis P. Wildebeest.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah, I remember that one. Because the joke was he was the world's greatest lover. Have you ever seen his live show where he does it?
Yep.
Yeah, and he gets someone from the audience onto like a inflatable bed. And he starts like... Credit to him, because in the 90s, they probably would have done a lesser comedian would have humped an audience member. But he just sits next to them and like bounces up and down, going like, oh, isn't it fabulous? Isn't it great? And then the bed just sinks.
I remember that.
Yeah,
I had that on VHS that probably cost the equivalent of £25. If yesterday's episode is anything to go by.
Yeah, he's got a bit in the interview where there's... This is where I originally learnt the fact about the fact when they were originally casting Maid Marian and Her Merry Men, which Mark is a fucking heathen about.
I just don't love it.
You should do. It's amazing. But anyway, his character was originally called Winston, and he pointed out that that was a ridiculously cliched name because every single TV programme in the world that had a black character called him Winston. So he suggested calling him Barrington because it was... You know, that's just as common a name. And they went with it, and it's a much better name, and it works really well with the character. So Barrington is ace.
Yeah, I think you're right. And for people who don't listen to our other podcasts, Colin gives me a hard time because I won't do Maid Marian on my podcast, Right in the Childhood, which is about kids' telly, because I didn't really watch Maid Marian. So sue me. Start your own.
Okay.
Don't. I don't need the competition.
Oh, yeah. I'm going to start a kids' TV one.
I think it's interesting how towards the end he does go on a large bit about the US Red Dwarf.
Yes.
Yeah. You could see the resentment. He wasn't subtle, was he?
No. He never has been.
No.
I mean, even when in like recent years he got voted off Strictly Come Dancing, he was not happy about it. It seems that he's quite competitive. He's really... Because when he got voted off, I was like, this is... Well, you know, he's been a dancer since he was about 16. I'm surprised he didn't get all the way through. I thought it wasn't fair when they announced him for it.
He felt like a ringer, didn't he?
Yeah. But it's interesting, because this would have been before Tongue Tied, wouldn't it? Would it?
Possibly.
Yes, I think.
Yeah,
because he does mention how he sort of, oh, you know, is his music something you'd like to go back to? And he says, if I'd got the right vehicle for it.
Yeah.
So, and then he does Tongue Tied.
Yeah, you're right. But no, it was a great interview. They've been great. All of them have been great. And this just feels really candid. Danny John-Jules doesn't give a shit what he says.
He doesn't. You do get the impression that some of it might annoy other members of the cast if they read it, but...
I mean, have you ever seen back in the day when Robert Llewellyn did his Carpool series? Everybody was waiting for him to get the other cast members on, and he got Danny John-Jules on just after he got nicked. was it threatening a bin man or something with a knife?
Fuck!
And they drive past where he got nicked. And Danny John-Jules, he just talks about it. And he doesn't give a crap. He's like, this is where I'm supposed to have done this. And he starts talking about what happened. And he said, one of my favourite things I've ever heard him say, he goes, I've worked with Craig Charles for, you know, six series of Red Dwarf. And if I can get through that, I'm not going to take a knife to you for some bins. It's always weird because he's always come across to me as quite blokey, but then he'll tell stories about, you know, when he was growing up, he was like living with four other dancers in a flat and everybody was climbing over each other's tights and stuff like that. It's a strange one because you don't normally meet or see interviews with like Broadway dancers or West End dancers and they're incredibly masculine, if you get what I mean. They're, you know, But Danny John Jones, if you see things with him now, he's normally dressed a bit like a gangster. He's got a cane and a big hat, and
he looks like a pimp.
Yeah.
Well, so does the cat half the time. So
true.
He's just carried it on.
Oh, dear.
It's one of the most surprising ones that when they go, oh, he was a dancer on the West End stage for years and he did Starlight Express. Go, really? because he's quite a bit of a, I suppose, wide boy is probably the best word to describe.
Oh, now I want a pepperami.
Yeah.
Do they do veggie pepperamis?
I think that would miss the point.
Oh. Next up is Are You a Red Dwarf Fan, which is basically a kind of pastiche of one of those 90s girl mags where they do like the Are You Compatible in Bed? Mostly A's, yeah. Mostly B's, mostly C's. And it's fucking silly and I really enjoyed it.
Oh, I didn't think it had aged very well.
No, perhaps not.
And this is, I alluded to in one of the previous episodes, remembering the fact that I was 10 years old when I was reading this. This was a page where I was reading it going, I don't think I should be reading this.
Yeah.
I didn't stop.
No, of course not.
You've got, you know, jokes about you're standing in your local newsagents reading this magazine. Is this because, B, you're wasting time until the cute shop assistant moves out of sight so you can get something down from the top shelf? I distinctly remember that at the time, asking what was special about the top shelf.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
But then you've got all the stuff like, what's your idea of a good night out? A strip show followed by a visit to a massage parlour, then a spot of curb crawling.
That's pushing it, isn't it?
Yeah, don't answer mostly bees.
It really is hoping that a lot of the stuff will go over the heads of people, doesn't it?
Yeah.
We're kind of skipping over the thing that draws your attention as soon as you look at the page, which is the drawing in the middle.
True.
Of a man in an anorak, a Smeghead t-shirt, a bra around his neck, fishnet stockings, what appears to be Doc Martens, and a leopard print posing pouch.
Yes. Did you mention the Spock ears?
I didn't know. And the crotch areas, that they don't skimp on detail. It's
how did this magazine not get closed down? But I still found, I absolutely acknowledge it's completely inappropriate. And a lot of Red Dwarf's humour is. But I found it funny. Did you get mostly A's, mostly B's or mostly C's?
I got A's.
I also got A's. Carl?
I didn't do it.
Probably for the best. Probably for the best.
Yeah, I took one look at it, looked at the picture and just went, oh, I'm just going to go on to the next page.
But it's the episode guide.
Yeah, yeah. I was going to say, unfortunately, the next is the fucking episode guide. Series 4, same as it has been for the last 4 issues, cack. Moving on. The next page is the holograms, which is letters answered by both Holly and the editor.
Yes.
And yeah, it covers Red Dwarf USA, David Ross, and VHS release dates. It all feels like people didn't have the internet.
There's a couple of dodgy bits that have aged very fucking badly on the letters page as well.
I know. I'm trying to spin a positive on this, Colin.
It's all massively outweighed by the utter brilliantness of the comic strip earlier, the original comic strip earlier on. So it's worth reading for that.
Yeah.
But you've got, there's Jim Will Fix It references, which at the time were acceptable because it was still on the telly and nobody knew, apart from everyone at the BBC.
Yeah.
But then you've got one, yeah, that's the one, Dear Red Dwarf Will Fix It. Can you fix it for me to dress up as Crichton and jump from the top of a wardrobe onto an unclothed Hattie Hayridge?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Yeah,
it's, you do. You do kind of get the impression that person is a virgin and will have been for a very long time. Was probably a, you know, 56-year-old one.
If you're listening and you wrote that letter, I hope you're ashamed of yourself.
Yes, yeah. Kevin Keld of Pocklington.
Yeah. Fucking Pocklington. Where's Pocklington?
It sounds northern. I think it might be Yorkshire, but my geography is shit.
I'm having a look now, but one of my favourite things on this page, as I say, it doesn't really hold up, but it's just a cute little phrase, which is the youngest Red Dwarf fan. She's 6 months old and rattle over nappy in love with the cat.
Yes.
I just like the phrase rattle over nappy.
And I remember reading that at the time. It's just weird what stuff sticks in your head like 30 years later.
Pocklington is a market town in the foot of the Yorkshire Wolds in East Riding of Yorkshire.
There you go.
I was right. Yeah.
It's not very big. It's 12 and a half miles by 22 miles.
If people live there and are listening, they probably know Kevin Keld.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you're listening, it's not right. That's not right, man.
Yeah, Kevin. Anyway, next up is another comic strip, and this is the Future Echoes that we were promised in the last issue, and it's very much the same format as when they covered the end. It basically takes the exact script, which obviously is incredibly funny, but it's quite a lazy thing to do with a comic strip.
It was a bit of a disappointment after the original story earlier on.
I think it would have been great if we hadn't had an exceptional original story 12 pages ago, you know?
Yeah. I wonder if, because all of the others, the adaptation one had been at the start. Mm. And I wonder if this was originally going to be at the start. And then they thought, no, let's swap them round because that original one is just brilliant.
Maybe.
There is one notable, really cool bit of artwork in this one. There's the bit where they're talking about whether, you know, when we get back to Earth, they, you know, the doctors have probably cured death. And they've got, like, what looks like a Dr. Rimmer treating a zombie, which always thought that artwork was proper cool when I was a kid.
Yeah, and this is what I've praised before, where they've gone and thought about what they can do with, basically, if you're drawing it, you've got an unlimited budget, haven't you? So the imagination stuff is great. And Lennon and McCartney, for example, actually look like fish rather than not.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm just looking, also the nurse in Rimmer's Doctors fantasy has got stockings and suspenders on, which is very Rimmer.
Yes.
There's little things in there that you see which kind of expand on what you've got. Like they show like Rimmer's workout sequence going a bit longer, and he shows him going for a punch bag, and his fist just goes straight through it. Silly stuff like that, and it expands on something which, if, like we said, because we know it and because now we've got the other strips in there, it could be seen as a bit of a disappointment, but then there's the little things in there that kind of make up for it. Like the very end of the strip, Lister throws his cigarette through Rimmer.
Yes.
Yes.
And I thought that was great. And I think it's probably something they wanted to do in the show, but they couldn't figure out how to do it.
And the other thing I noticed was in the end, the artwork of Holly had like kind of floppy hair, and they've made him look like Holly now.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting to see how they've, because it's the same artist from what I gather.
Yeah.
It looks like it.
Yeah. It's kind of tightened up a bit. Maybe he got a note of like, can you make everything look a bit more like the show?
Maybe.
Yeah.
And finally, we've got the next issue, which has a Craig Charles interview. All things Crichton Beautiful, another quiz, an Ace Rimmer comic strip, and a fun page.
Please take a moment just to appreciate the pun of all things Crichton Beautiful.
Yes.
It is indeed beautiful. And having not had a fun page this issue, which, you know, I'm displeased. I'm excited for tomorrow when there'll be another fun page.
Also, June 23rd is Say No to Being a Gimboid Day. Was it June 20? Is it 3rd or 5th?
25th.
June 25th, sorry, is Say No to Being a Gimboid Day, which is 3 days off my birthday. So I could have been born on Say No to Being a Gimboid Day.
Good.
But you weren't, so it's okay. You can carry on.
Yeah.
All right, gentlemen. Colin first this time. Favourite and least favourite articles.
I mean, favourite it's far too easy, isn't it? It's the original comic strip, Mutinous Pursuits. It's
okay,
great, and it's what we want more of, you know, throughout the run. That's what this should be for. And then least favourite, it's going to have to be that letter on the letters page from Kevin Keld.
Yeah, Kevin. Okay, Carl, what about you?
I'm actually going to go for the Danny John-Jules interview. I really enjoyed the Danny John-Jules interview. I do enjoy the original strip, but just because of it triggering quite a few memories of other TV for me growing up, that interview. And yeah, it's got to be the letter from Kevin. Yeah. He wants to dress up as Crichton as well, which is just, I mean, when we eventually get around to reviewing Pink Dwarf, maybe we'll find out that Kevin wrote it.
Maybe. Kevin, if you are listening, I'm sure you're not quite as odd as you were when you wrote this letter. And if you are listening, sorry. That's old Kevin. I'm sure we'd like new Kevin. New Kevin is probably more enlightened. Sorry, Kevin. So for me, I agree with Colin. It's the Mutinous Pursuits comic, but it was close with the Danny John-Jules interview. Those two were absolutely the kind of standout things. And I'm going to give Kevin a break and say, fuck the episode guide.
Yeah, that's fair. I think Kevin wrote it.
Maybe. Fucking Kevin. So, I don't know. What should we plug today? Plug your favourite podcast on the We Made This Network. Colin.
Which one do I go for? We Dig Music and Free With This Month's Issue are both fantastic.
Plug your favourite one that isn't yours.
Oh, right, okay. They're all rubbish. it's difficult to choose from because there's many which I very much dig. But if I go for one that I really like that isn't one of ours, We Buy Records is very good.
Cool. Carl, what about you? What do you listen to on the We Made This Network?
Well, I personally every so often like to get hit right in the childhood with a certain Mark Adams and Fraser Summers. I just find it very, very fun.
That's just creeping.
I'm down with that. I mean, I'm very fond of Cerebral Jukebox and indeed Free With This Month's Issue, but that is sick of fancy. So I'm going to go for Podcast 616, which is a lot of fun. It is a Marvel MCU podcast on the We Made This Network. All of these shows that we've talked about, if you think that they are interesting, you can find them where you find Shipwrecked and Comatose. And that's it, innit? So yes. We'll be back tomorrow with issue 5. So until then...
Fuck's sake, Kevin.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast, was created and produced by Mark Adams and Kurt North. You can find us on Twitter at Red Dwarf Pod, and we are part of the We Made This Podcast Network, which can be found online at wemadethispod.com or on Twitter at We Made This Pod.
Hello, everyone. This is Tony, Network Chief of We Made This. As you know, our podcast network brings together a brilliant assortment of talent who talk about all kinds of pop culture content, such as the episode you just listened to. We're not going anywhere, but we'd love to keep the lights on for even longer if you're able to support our network on Patreon. For just £2 a month, you get your name in lights and the satisfaction of knowing you're helping us produce more great audio. And for £3 a month, you'll get your name in lights, but you'll also get access to an exclusive bi-monthly podcast from the We Made This talent pool on podcasting, pop culture, and, well, you tell us. We'll take your suggestions. For less than the price of a coffee per month, you can help keep We Made This going. Just head to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. That's patreon.com/WeMadeThis. And get the ball rolling.
Elsewhere on We Made This.
The Movie Palace.
Yeah, I can remember my first viewing of The Sound of Music quite distinctly, actually, because it was 8 days ago.
You've never seen it before that?
8 days ago was the first time I'd sat down to watch it from start to finish. Now, I always associate Big Sound of Music. It's interesting that you both talk about it as an Easter thing. It is associated with bank holidays here, but I don't think it's just Easter. So I had seen a lot of these sequences. I think if I was inside on a bank holiday when I was a child and the Sound of Music was on, it was normally a bad thing because it meant it was raining and I couldn't go out and play football.
Shipwrecked and Comatose, a Red Dwarf podcast.
I've got 5 tattoos. So I started getting tattoos when I was about 5 years ago, and it was just sort of one by one, I guess. So not huge coverage, but I'm definitely got the bug, so to speak. So, but the latest one is the Red Dwarf one, yeah.
And that's the one you've decided to talk about today. Describe it for me.
Yeah.
Free with this month's issue.
Obviously, you must remember the sign in musical exchanges.
I do indeed.
Do not play. Yeah, there was a few riffs, weren't there, that you weren't allowed to play? This being top of them.
Enter Sandman, Smoke on the Water, Stairway to Heaven, anything widdly above the 12th fret, I think that song said.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that paid no attention to that shit. Remember when we almost got thrown out for playing with that delay pedal?
Yes.
Amazing.
I also remember the day that I went in with my birthday money to Musical Exchanges to buy a pedal, and I ended up buying the Boss Hyper Metal, and I was insisting to the bloke that I was buying it from. I was like, I don't really play much metal, I just like the sound of it. I want to use it for sort of, you know, more experimental sounds. It's like, you're wearing a Metallica t-shirt.
I'm not that into metal, actually.
I want to do something more like Swans with it, like My Bloody Valentine, that kind of thing.
Which I did, but I was wearing a Metallica t-shirt at the time.
Check out all of these shows and more on the We Made This podcast network.
Hello, it's Mark. I did the quiz wrong, didn't I? I was supposed to do my top 6 episodes up to series 5 rather than of all time, but I didn't read it properly. So I'm here at the end of the show to tell you that. At 6, it's The Inquisitor. At 5, it's Polymorph. At 4, it's Queeg. At 3, it's Justice. At 2, it's Quarantine. And at 1, it is Back to Reality. Also, we didn't tell you whether we're right or left-handed, and I know that's important to you all because, you know, it's like deep and interesting information about your hosts, right? You reckon? Anyway, those two are right-handed and I'm left. Don't know what that says about us, but yeah, that's it. That feels weird when you're doing it on your own.